Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, a Waukesha Republican asks the state Supreme Court to block the latest mask on order. The injunction request was filed after the legislature voided the governor's January order, but Evers immediately issued a new one. Evers says the budget he gives the legislature Tuesday would legalize recreational marijuana and raise $165 million a year by taxing it. But the president of the Senate says no way that becomes law. Evers will also ask for a $500 tax credit annually for caregivers. And the Act 10 debate began exactly 10 years ago, drawing a protest that attracted worldwide attention and raising the national profile of former Governor Scott Walker. Rewind, your week in review for February 12th.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
The debate over face masks continued, and it went in a new direction last week. Waukesha businessman and Republican contributor Jerry Fabrick filed an injunction request with the state Supreme Court, asking that court to block the newest face mask edict Governor Tony Evers issued about an hour after the legislature overturned his, January face mask edict. Now, let's just put it in context. The governor also vetoed a legislative passed bill dealing with COVID relief. So a lot happened since our last rewind. You have an injunction request. You have the governor vetoing the legislature's COVID bill. But important to note before I go to toss it to JR, the injunction request comes before the state Supreme Court, which has a number of court cases pending before it dealing with the governor's emergency powers, whether they can go back to back or they must be issued for only 60 days and then subject to ratification or rescinding by the legislature. It comes before that Supreme Court ruling. Okay, JR, your take on the Jerry Fabrick injunction plea.
Well, basically he's arguing that the court is a last resort to put some limits back in place and restore constitutional balance. Now, that's his argument, but we've also seen Republican lawmakers file a brief supporting Fabrick's request, saying that the guardrail, to use their word, we have in state law in Wisconsin for a governor's powers in emergency is to have the legislature come in, either extend it after 60 days or vote it down. Legislature voted it down last week, and then Evers issued a new one right afterward. They're arguing that there's no more guardrail unless the court steps in and restores that. Now, obviously, to what you said, the governor has argued that the pandemic is not one singular event. That is, there are situations that are unique during that event that justify the issuing a new public health emergency. But Republicans have been arguing consistently that you get one shot. After that shot's over, it's up to the legislature to extend it or to overturn it. What I'm watching now is how long does this take? Because Fabrick filed, it's an emergency motion on Tuesday. It's now Friday. The court hasn't said anything about requesting briefs or what it's going to do with it. So I'm kind of curious, where's the urgency? They heard oral arguments in November in the lawsuit seeking to rein in what Evers has been doing with his public power, this public health declaration power. It's now mid-February. We don't have a decision. Why? There was some pressing matters in the fall, and it still seems to be pressing now, but there's not a decision. So it kind of makes you wonder what's taking the court so long to issue a ruling, because really, unless the court steps in, we're in a situation where if Republicans come in next week and want to vote down Evers' latest public health emergency, he just issue a new one. So we don't have a clear guidance of what the powers are until the court lays it down.
Yeah, and one example, you and I read that latest executive order by the governor on face mask, and he said one example of how this situation is changing, justifying a new order, is the emergence of the variants. So I just want to cite I want to quote from the Fabrick legal brief. There is now quite literally nothing to stop the governor from keeping Wisconsin in a perpetual state of emergency short of an order of this Supreme Court. So the court could rule on the injunction request before it issues a formal ruling on occupancy limits, et cetera. Right, JR?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the court can't do what it wants to do. It's the Supreme Court of Wisconsin.
Yeah. Okay, good point. Okay. Now, JR, as we've both been reporting, the governor, because reporters like us can't focus on everything he's going to recommend next Tuesday in his 2021-23 budget, the governor has been he's been coming out with details of what's in his budget. And one of the main ones this week was his proposal to legalize and tax marijuana. He said this, that our proposal will say you must be 21 years old to buy recreational marijuana. Recreational marijuana could only be sold by retailers licensed by the Department of Revenue. If you have been certified to need medical marijuana because of a healthcare condition, you would not pay the taxes. Wisconsin residents could have up to 2 ounces and 6 plants for personal use. And I had to read this 3 times, but the governor's proposal says only marijuana grown in Wisconsin could be processed. Now, this goes further, JR, than what he recommended in his budget message 2 years ago, which was decriminalize, right?
Yep, decriminalization and then also medical marijuana. This is now adding full legalization for recreational use plus medical marijuana. We haven't heard from Devin Lemme, the Senate Majority Leader, about this proposal yet. However, Chris Cappingham, the Senate President, ripped it this week. Robin Voss, Assembly Speaker, has said over and over again that he's open the idea of medical marijuana, but only in a separate bill. So this proposal is not going to go very far. A good guess would be that once the Joint Finance Committee gets the governor's budget, one of the first motions it will take up will be one that will take out policy. And as we've often said in the show, policy is in the eye of the beholder in the Capitol. But they will take out a string of proposals from the budget in one swoop. I would bet you money this one's one of them, even though the revenue is expected to be like $165 million a year, I think it is. And Evers wants to use half that money to help develop communities and a chunk of it to help, you call it sparsity aids, for small rural school districts to help them with their added costs for transportation, things like that. He wants to dedicate that money to help them. I didn't get the impression that Republicans think it's worth legalizing marijuana to do that. Remember, though, this is probably the most controversial proposal he's put in his budget so far. Even so, Marquette poll in 2019, I believe, found 3/4 of voters support medical marijuana in Wisconsin, if not more. About 60% support recreational marijuana. So it's not like it's controversial with the public. It's controversial with Republican lawmakers.
Okay, but just a quick follow-up, JR. By broadening his call to legalize recreational marijuana, tax it, and as you said, raise $165 million eventually, does it hurt those like Senator Mary Felskowski who have offered legitimate medical marijuana bills?
Well, I don't know that the Senate Republican caucus is there yet even on medical marijuana. I mean, it was interesting that for the last couple of years, when Voss has been saying he's open to it, Scott Fitzgerald was seen as a roadblock because he was the majority leader in the Senate, and he kept saying no interest. When I've had conversations with Senate Republicans, my impression is that Fitzgerald, one, was personally opposed to it, but two, reflected where his caucus was. I don't know that that caucus as a whole is there yet to pass medical marijuana, even without this proposal.
Got it. Okay, now let's take a look at a couple comments from the governor in support of his proposal, legalizing and taxing marijuana in Wisconsin, just like we do already with alcohol, ensures a controlled market and safe product are available for both recreational and medicinal users, and can open the door for countless opportunities for us to reinvest in our communities. And as you alluded to, Senate President Chris Cappingham said, the legalization of recreational marijuana is not in the best interests of Wisconsinites. There are serious health and societal issues that need to be understood, and Governor Evers shouldn't sacrifice the safety of the people of Wisconsin, particularly our children, in pursuit of the mighty dollar. Okay, JR, the governor is continuing to roll out major budget initiatives, be part of his Tuesday budget speech to the legislature. Let's also look at the $600 million for long-term care. Let's just break it down a couple ways. $200 million to start a $500 per year tax credit for those who are providing, who are caregivers. $240 million increased reimbursements, to nursing homes, jump those by 11% each year. $77 million for home health care. $150 million more for mental health programs, $106 million more for infant and toddler care, early education and child care, worker pay. He also said, and we're not highlighting this, yes, he's going to call again to expand the Medicaid to offer it to more middle-income residents, saying that would pick up $634 million from the feds that would save that much in tax dollars. But J.R., that's no. That's a non-starter, isn't it?
Well, Republicans pulled it out last time. The expectation is they would probably do it again. The only question I've heard from Republicans is, at what point does that program become so beneficial, so rich in the dollars you can capture, that they say, okay, we just can't pass it up? Right now, we're one of, I believe, a dozen states that have not accepted the federal money to expand Medicaid. We're an outlier. If you look at the map, there's a solid block in the Southeast, and we're kind of all by ourselves in the Midwest as somebody hasn't done it. And again, Republicans made a policy choice under Scott Walker a few years back about this. They've stuck to it. They've started calling it expanding welfare. I just don't know that they're ready to move on that issue at this point.
Well, okay, on this morning, as you reported, JR, well, other news organizations too, the governor is now recommending a dramatic increase in the ability of local governments to tax. Specifically, most counties now can levy a half-cent sales tax. The governor is recommending going to a 1% local option sales tax with referendum approval. That's very key, point one. Point two, communities with a population of more than 30,000 could adopt a half-cent sales tax, also with a referendum. Pretty significant expansion of local control, right?
Yeah, it impacts 27 communities in Wisconsin, one village in 26 cities that are 30,000 or more. Like, there's this constant, I mean, I've heard it for the whole time I've been up here, and you probably heard it even longer than I have. There's a constant complaint from locals that they don't have enough control over their finances, especially counties, which in some ways become arms of the state in delivering state programs, that they've been starved of resources for things like roads, local services that they can't keep up because of property tax caps that we've seen. So this is an alternative to going to property taxpayers and saying, we need more. This is going to hit you when you go buy something. Now, of course, there's an argument to be made that if you're a county like Dane or Milwaukee, a place like Brown County, those cities are too, there's some tourist attractions in those places. So it's not just your residents who pay the sales tax, visitors paid as well. But it's a new source of revenue, or would be a new source of revenue, for these communities to pay for costs. The flip side is, Republicans are going to say, I'm guessing, wait a second, you know, you're talking about raising taxes in a time, in a pandemic. I mean, yeah, it's been tough for everybody. It's been federal money flowing in left and right. Why are we going to do this to taxpayers when they've maybe been struggling a little bit to make ends meet with the economy going the way it has been?
Right, and I'm reminded of that February 3 letter from the new co-chairs of finance, Representative Bourne, Senator Markline, saying, Governor, when you give us this budget on Tuesday, don't recommend excessive spending and tax increases. So they could very well have that same reaction to the governor's pretty significant proposals to expand the taxing authorities of local governments. While we're on the subject of the Finance Committee, I think 7 of the 16 are new. They had one of their first meetings, probably the first meeting of the session yesterday, mm-hmm. and they decided they have the state controls about $66 million in federal COVID-19 aid to schools, and they decided to reward districts that have offered in-person instruction. Let's hear a little bit of the give and take between Senator Markline and Representative Goyke on that, please.
The motion before us today provides an incentive to those districts that have been doing the right thing and by offering in-person instruction. We know it's good for our kids. It's the right thing to do, I believe. It also provides an incentive for those schools that are not currently open to in-person instruction. So, you know, the CDC has said that, our kids need to be in school.
You're making a political point showing how tough you are, that you want things to go back in person. Everyone wants to go back in person. And the way that we do that is by defeating COVID, by not introducing repeals of mask mandates, and actually passing an Assembly and Senate bill that delivers relief to people in need and tools to local governments to fight the disease and promote vaccine distribution and free and widespread testing. This is absolutely the wrong way to go to get back in person sooner. And it forces locally elected officials to make an unfair and inappropriate choice, and we should vote down this motion.
As Senator Markline and Representative Bourne said in their pre-meeting press conference, they really want to send a message to encourage in-person instruction. And you heard the concern in Representative Goyke's voice there. I was interested in knowing that they controlled, as I said, only about 69 million out of 686 million, which means that the federal government dictated, based on Title I poverty, number of students in poverty, some of our most urban districts will get the following amounts. MPS, Milwaukee, $225 million. Kenosha, $20 million. Racine, $23.6 million. Madison, $18.9 million. Green Bay, $19.9 million. Also, JR, they recommended some changes in the tax code. They recommended that going along with federal law, it's called codifying. How's that for a term that we all, don't all use? Going along with federal law, which allows the deduction of PPP, Paycheck Protection Program expenses related to COVID. That and other change, compressing from 4 to 3, are tax codes that would mean collecting $540 million less in corporate taxes. Any PSs on the changes in the tax code, JR?
Yeah, well, one about the schools, too. Remember that there are only 172 school districts eligible for the pot of money that will be used now to be an incentive to get kids back in school. So, like, the biggest ones, Madison, Milwaukee, Racine, Green Bay, that have been largely virtual, they can't earn more money by going back in the classroom on this proposal. So it's kind of symbolic in a lot of ways for the biggest districts that aren't in the classroom. They're not going to be affected. Yeah. Two, with the bill you're talking about, the big question I have is, what's a governor going to do? So if you pull back a little bit, the whole thing with the PPP loans is that you're basically, they're kind of calling it a double dip. That if you, typically you can't deduct both a expense and a loan, you'd allow to do this. And the Democratic argument is there are some businesses that are did quite well during the pandemic. And so they took this money, they became even more profitable. So why should they get a benefit right now, tax-wise, for getting this forgivable loan and how they spent it? So I'm wondering what's Evers going to do. There's money right now in the budget to cover this expense, the $540 million. So it's not like it's a money crunch thing. And Republicans added the earned income tax credit benefit or proposal that Evers wanted, which is roughly $30 million. That's a tax credit for low-income families in Wisconsin. Yes. They added that this bill as a sweetener. So what's he going to do? And then, too, how does this fit with the budget? Because you mentioned that it's a separate bill that Dale Kiyungi has proposed, a Republican from Milwaukee suburbs, to collapse the tax brackets from 4 to 3. That passed out of a standalone committee in the Senate unanimously, but it hasn't been part of the 4 joint finance yet. So I'm wondering, what's going to be the tax proposal in Evers' budget? Is he going to address income taxes? Because remember, back in November, when he started building his budget off of agency request, he had X number of dollars in the till. As of a couple weeks ago, he's got an extra $1.2 billion to play with from the Fiscal Bureau's projections. So there's ability to do things if he wants to. It's a question of how creative does Evers want to be. And two, don't forget that budget last time that he did in 2019, he proposed things like putting a cap on the manufacturing ag credit. This is a credit for manufacturers and farmers, thus the name. But he wanted to limit it to a certain level of income, the first couple hundred thousand dollars of income, I think it was, to try and put a restriction on the wealthy, the bigger businesses that benefit from it. Might we see things like that would raise more revenue? He's going to raise, in theory, $165 million a year off of marijuana. So there's going to be uppers in this budget, various places. How does he use that money? It's all got to fit together somehow in the end. We land this plane on Tuesday.
Yeah, he's not going to take the advice of Representative Board and Senator Merkline to not include any excessive spending and other bold reforms, correct?
Well, excessive is in the eye of the beholder.
I understand.
Governor Evers might argue that this is needed spending to help schools and cities, et cetera. I mean, this is his reelect budget. We've been around for a long time. Governors have two different budgets. You do the pain budget, your first one, early in your term, to kind of set yourself up to do a reelection budget, the second one in your term, that delivers all the goods. This is the one that's going to make people happy, right? They don't feel the pain that they felt in the last budget. They feel all kinds of good, warm feelings from all this money being handed out for mental health, farmers, all these things we've seen so far. They're all about delivering for his base and sending a message about what his priorities are ahead of re-election.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, because it changed all of our lives, let's do a quick update on COVID. What the Department of Health Services announced this week is our allotment has grown from about, from the feds, 71,000 to 89,000. And also, the feds are now going to be giving directly to 117 Walgreens stores in Wisconsin in underserved areas. They'll get 18,000 doses, which, as the DHS official said, amounts only to about 100 per store. The first community vaccination clinic opened Wednesday in Janesville. And the but overall, despite a dramatic increase in demand, we still are not getting enough shots. Now, to summarize that and to talk a little bit more about the Walgreens, let's listen to Deputy Secretary Julie Willems Van Dyke and Stephanie Schauer, who's our vaccination coordinator, please.
We still have hundreds of thousands of people to vaccinate, and 18,000 a week is going to get us there sooner, but I don't think I can quite classify it as fast yet. So step by step, we will get there. But these are not huge increases in dose compared to the need, but they are good increases. What we really need are more vaccines, and that will come through better manufacturing and also as new vaccines are brought into the mix.
As mentioned earlier, the number of doses per store is approximately 100 doses, so it is a very small amount, and people do need to have an appointment scheduled to go ahead and receive vaccine, and they can access that through the Walgreens website. We don't know the number of doses that we will receive or that they will receive in subsequent weeks.
Let's quickly do the numbers, JR. As of yesterday, 860,309 vaccinations had been administered. Of those, 197,362 second doses. Those people are done with the vaccination program. 34.1% of those 65 and older had received at least the first dose, and 11.1% of all Wisconsin residents over the age 16, and that's important because CDC guidelines right now do not allow the vaccination of those under 16, had received it. And I was so intrigued when you looked at the gender breakdown of who's received at least the first dose, 38% men, 62% women. Then yesterday's report, total now 553,110 positives, 6,140 deaths, 879, which is a drop in our seven-day average positives, but number of positives reported Thursday, 1,239. JR, 10 years ago yesterday, then-Governor Scott Walker proposed Act 10. Now, let's walk through, which was, we lived through that. It was a fascinating historical time in the Capitol. Let's just do a TikTok on that. February 11, Governor Walker introduced the bill repealing collective bargaining for most public employees, requiring them to pay more for health care and pensions. February 14, protests began, attracted worldwide attention. Wisconsin and I got a call from Al Jazeera. We'd like to use your footage. It was amazing. February 17, all 14 Senate Democrats leave for Illinois, trying to block a vote on Walker's changes. March 9, 18 Senate Republicans amend and passed the assembly passed bill while Democrats still in session. March 10, assembly gives final approval, 53-42 with all yes votes from Republicans to Walker's changes. He quickly signed it. I did a quick TikTok, JR. Your memories and your thoughts on the Act 10 debate?
I remember there was a joint finance hearing on the proposal that went until I think like around midnight. Republicans cut it off after that, but Democrats kept it going. I walked down to the first floor of the Capitol, kind of the opening looking down in the floor of the rotunda, and there are people there. And I remember a conversation with Capitol Police, where they basically said, let them stay, you know, not a big deal. And I thought, I'm not sure it's a good idea. And then fast forward weeks and weeks and weeks, I was there on the floor of the rotunda watching the last holdouts, maybe less than a dozen people who were like outnumbered 4-1 by cops and reporters as they kind of came to grips with the fact that it was over. And there's one local media personality who was kind of noting that this one woman was having a hard time leaving because the party was over. And it wasn't about her anymore. It wasn't about this display. It was back to real life. And it was just kind of a surreal scene to spend all those weeks in the Capitol just going through that.
Right. I've got a couple of memories. I've I've really enjoyed. It's been a wonderful ride to cover that Capitol for more than 30 years. But for the first time, I tried to go to a Governor Walker press conference, and I was literally blocked by the protesters. First time I've not been able to attend a press conference in the governor's conference room. A few days later, there was another Governor Walker press conference in the conference room, and I was trying to navigate my way through the protesters, and a huge deputy sheriff said, "Show me your credentials." "Okay, you trying to get into the governor's conference room?" "Yes, I am." And that huge deputy sheriff threw protesters out of my path, letting me to attend that governor's conference room. At the end of that, the protesters shouting so loud, "Tell the truth, tell the truth." So close to the East Wing entrance to the governor's office, we reporters had to exit through the attorney general's office. It was just a absolutely amazing time. Okay, let's wrap up the Act 10 memory lane this way. How have some groups scored this? The Act 10 changes, the MacIver Institute, Act 10 generated $12.4 billion savings between 2011 and 2020. The Wisconsin Policy Forum, Act 10 requirements that public employees contribute more for pensions reduce state and local government costs by $5.2 billion between 2011 and 2017. JR, final assembly vote, 53-42 on Act 10. I bet you can't name the four assembly Republicans who voted against it.
Who's even left? I remember I don't want to say because I don't want to like besmirch your reputation at the ones I think off the top of my head. Who were they?
Okay. I had to look it up. It's not something I carry around. Representative Spanbauer and Nerissen, Coffert, and Tranel. Just a moment of trivia. But boy, history was made 10 years ago. Okay, JR, into your stock picks, please.
John Miller, he's a venture capitalist, also a major Democratic donor. He was appointed to the Board of Regents this week. You know, he's connected politically, but he is eminently qualified for the job. The really interesting thing to me is that this puts Evers one step closer to having majority of the appointments on the Board of Regents. That actually happened come May. One of Walker's appointees, her term is up. That would flip it from an 8-8 tie to 9-7 Evers with two other members, the DPI superintendent and the president of the tech college system. Why is that important? Because the board picks the president in June. The president has a large sway over the agenda, what's going on. Right now, the vice president is Mike Grebe, well-known in Republican political circles. He's the vice president. What I'm wondering is, will he ascend the presidency, or will the Evers appointees get together and pick somebody else? Just something to kind of watch as we get toward that June meeting with the Board of Regents.
And Mixer.
Ron Kind. So already we've had the NRCC go after Kind with the digital ad over reopening schools. The American Action Network is...
What's the alphabet soup? National Republican Campaign Committee? Okay,
yes.
Excuse me.
So the NRCC has Kind on its list of 47 Democrats. It's targeting for 2022. The American Action Network is the one that did the digital ad about reopening schools. I asked insiders this week, you know, what should I make of this? And they said, it's all noise for now until we know what Ron Kind's district looks like. Remember, Donald Trump won the district by 4.5 points in 2016, 4.7 in 2020. That district is trending away from Ron Kind. However, it's not going to be the same district in 2022 that it was in 2020 because we have demographic changes. We're going to have new maps drawn, probably by a court. Does Ron Kind's district go farther north? If it does, he's in trouble because that's more Republican territory. Does it give up territory to the north to the 7th Congressional District and move east toward Madison to pick up places like Iowa and Sauk County, which would make it more Democratic? That'd be good for Ron Kind. So until you know what this looks like, kind of tune out the noise. And oh, by the way, we just found out today from the Census Bureau that it will not now deliver the data needed to draw the lines until September. Oh, that means that we're not even going to start on those maps until the fall. Now, the computers are so good these days, they can knock it out in a day or two. Easy, whatever map you want. But getting it passed, then probably vetoed by Governor Evers because he's not going to agree with Robin Voss and Devin LeMahieu, going to court, we're facing a major crunch next spring to have a court draw those maps in time to get nomination papers out and people running for office for 2022.
Okay, you got 10 seconds on falling.
The hunt is back on. It's been a long, tortured process with this whole thing, but A judge ruled yesterday that the DNR has to go forward the hunt this month for the wolf.
Right. Okay, but the state has not yet announced whether it's going to appeal that decision. But we're out of time. Next week, we're going to break down the governor's budget. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for February 12.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.